morning, everybody, and welcome to the Portland City Council. Before we begin, just the usual rules of the chamber. If you're a lobbyist lobbying on behalf of a business, an organization, even a nonprofit, you need to disclose that before you testify. There's to encourage as much communication as possible. If you like something being said, you're welcome to put your thumbs up. If you don't, you're welcome to put your thumbs down. But no hooting, no hollering, no burping, no noise, because we want everyone to feel comfortable expressing their point of view, even if it might be different than the majority of people in the room. The communications are an opportunity of 3 minutes for folks to say whatever they want. It's your 3 minutes. Council during communications doesn't respond. And let's see what else. When you approach the mic, all you have to do is give us your first and last name. No address, no telephone number, none of that sort of information. With that, hi, Carla.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Can you please call the roll?
Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Adams.
Here. Quorum is present. We shall proceed. Beginning with communications, can you please read the title for item number 887?
Request of Charles E. Long to address council regarding Commissioner Leonard's pernicious plot to poison Portland's precious, pure water supply.
Mr. Long, welcome back.
Thank you. My name is Charles Long, and shall I start?
Please go ahead. Yeah.
An acquaintance of mine asked me this morning how I felt about being on television this morning, and I told her I was scared. However, I'm more scared of the imposition of a totalitarian system of imposing mass medication on the citizens of Portland. I was a Navy veteran during World War II, fighting against the totalitarian regimes of Germany and Japan, and coming home after discharge, I found that there was another warfare to fight, and that's the imposition of forced mass medication. I became involved in the 1956 vote on fluoridation, and I was secretary and acting president, and we were able, by grassroots effort, to defeat the measure. It is evident today, however, that the City Council on September 12th will vote to impose fluoridation on the residents of Portland, apparently without referring it to the voters. This is a arrogant arrogant contempt for the residents of this city. And the way it was promoted in the offices of the commissioners were very unseemly, and the commissioners obtained only the one viewpoint. And in the coming hearing on September 12th, it'll be perfunctory and a sham, because the commissioners have already decided how they're going to vote without hearing both sides. I wanted to read a paragraph from the book, The Case Against Fluoride. All hazardous waste ended up in our drinking water, and bad science and powerful politics that kept it there. Dr. William Hersey quoted this quotation to the author.
And sir, your time's up.
You know, I can't read it.
So how long is it?
Mr. Long.
Pardon?
How long is it?
One paragraph.
Yeah, go ahead.
Putting this stuff in the drinking water is, in essence, just a hazardous waste management tool. It has nothing to do with dental health whatsoever. It has to do with defending the reputation of people who have been promoting fluoridation for years and years and years and now find themselves way out on a limb and have nothing more to say except safe and effective, safe and effective, safe and effective, when in fact it is neither safe nor effective. They can't change. They're riding a tiger and they can't get off. Thank you.
So, Mr. Long.
No.
Mr. Long.
You can use
Mr.
your
Long.
Thumb, ma'am.
Pardon?
Mr. Long. Could, go ahead and take a seat.
Pardon?
I wanted to ask you a question.
Sure.
Go ahead and take a seat.
He's saying you can go ahead and sit back down if you want.
As Mayor Adams said, we don't, as you know, usually ask questions when people testify. I've been, it's been my pleasure for 10 years to listen to you come and testify, and oftentimes I learn a lot from what you have said over the last decade and many times agree with you. But I'm just curious because I've always found your presentations to be thoughtful and balanced and influential. I want to ask you a question, but first say a couple things. Over 73% of Americans drink fluoridated water.
It's very unfortunate.
That's 204 million people. And this initiative to fluoridate public water in Portland, which is the largest city in the United States that does not have fluoridated water,
has been
endorsed by the American Academy of Family Physicians, the American Family Academy of Pediatric Physicians, which represents children's doctors. The Centers for Disease Control said that public fluoridation of public water supplies is one of the top 10 health advancements of the entire 20th century. So I'm just curious if all of those organizations, there are many others, particularly organizations that represent low-income people and minorities, feel so strongly that this initiative prevents tooth decay without any health side effects, what your reaction is to that?
Again, before you reply, I appreciate those of you that are doing the thumbs up or thumbs down. That I'm talking to folks behind you. Appreciate you doing that again. Let the conversation happen in silence. Go ahead, Mr. Long.
I wondered if you wanted to react to that. Why you think those organizations that are, I think, well-respected, including the Oregon Dental Association, the American Dental Association, and others, would not would support an initiative that could actually harm people, whereas they are actually claiming it helps people without any of the side effects you cited?
The issue is terribly complex, and if you read this book and other literature, I have 27 pages of bibliography that the Multnomah County Library gave me of books, medical articles, and the influence of the Alcoa company is absolutely significant in the imposition of fluoridation. And it's a very, very complex issue, and to support it just with getting one viewpoint is, I think, outrageous.
I'd be happy to look at that. Thank you.
Thank you. Carla, can you please read the title for item number 888?
Request of David John Allison to address council regarding the precedent set by veterans' protest of World War I that paved the way for war bonds, which made urban development possible.
Mr. Allison, can you turn up the mic? Mr. Allison, are you here? All right. Can you please read the title for item number 889?
Request of Michael Krupp to address council regarding the Commissioner of Police directly counter the lies heard through the ecosystem of TV.
Mr. Krupp. All right, can you please read the title for item number 890?
Request of James Lopes to address council regarding trafficking with his children.
Mr. Lopes. All right. Can you please read the title, item number 891?
Request of Joe Walsh to address council regarding drones.
Mr. Walsh.
My name is Joe Walsh, and today I'm representing the Oregon Progressive Party. And the topic is drones. And the reason that we're here today is to preemptively ask you to think about this. We gave you a sample of what we would like to see in legislation, resolution, or the sense of the council. Drones have been around for a while now. They're normally used by the Department of War, better known as the Department of Defense. They're used in Pakistan, they're used in Afghanistan, just to name the two big theaters. But as with all new things, people are now looking at drones to fly over cities. And to give you an example, Seattle Police Department, on their own, bought a drone, got a permit, and they can fly it over their city. They didn't even bother asking the politicians. They didn't go before the city council and say, hey, what do you think of this idea? They just did it. Our police department is not beyond that. So we're here today to say, hey, folks, think about this. Drones are aircraft that are controlled in some other place, in a control booth someplace. Now, the Navy, which I used to belong to a long time ago, are the principal people that use drones as pilots to control them. So they're actually Navy pilots that have now gone on to running drones. This is a crash that happened in Maryland, with a Navy pilot at the controls, very well trained. But what happens with drones is when you shut off your TV set, you lose the visual. When the drone goes out of control, you lose the visual. It drops. Wherever it is, it's coming down. In this instance, you can see the fire that was caused. We were fortunate that it fell into a marsh. Fortunate. The Navy didn't know where the hell the damn thing was. They had to send up a helicopter to find it. If this hit this building, would destroy it. So we're saying to you, look.
Sir, you need to wrap up.
We're saying to you, think about this. We don't expect you to do it, but we're asking anyway. Think about it. We will do more in the future. It is something that you have to face. Don't get caught by your police department buying them on their own and flying them over to your city.
Thank you.
Because
appreciate
there will be
your time.
A crash. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I will be so glad when you leave.
We're now going to consider the consent agenda. Does anyone have any items to pull from the consent agenda?
We have 900 and 901.
Okay. Can you... we'll consider those later.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to... We read the titles later?
Yes. Okay. 900. Approve pilot program to reduce requirements for initiating an area parking permit program. And 901 is authorize the designation of 20 miles per hour neighborhood greenway streets.
All right, we'll consider those later. Can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. Can you please read the title for report, item number 892?
Accept Public Works Annual Report, Fiscal Year 2011-12.
All right, could I have the appropriate staff come up for item number 892? And who'd like to begin?
I will.
Mr. Scarlett.
Okay, good morning, Paul Scarlett. Director for Bureau of Development Services. Appreciate the opportunity to share a few remarks about the Public Works Permitting Improvement Project. A year ago, we were here presenting on the improvements that had been made to the Public Works permit process, and Council did share and indicate some concerns about the transition of this process in that there had seemed to be a lack of clear leadership in terms of which infrastructure bureau would be the lead. So I'm here today on behalf of Bureau of Development Services, but also as a city, because this is such a important improvement process that I'm excited to be with Tom Miller here from PBOT and Chris Ware from PBOT to talk about some of the improvements, which they will go into more details. But in March of this year, I did forward a cover memo as part of a quarterly report for improvements to the public work permitting process that indicated that Bureau of Transportation had been assigned the lead as part of the infrastructure bureaus. And that lead role, I'm very confident in Tom and his staff that they will continue to make the improvements necessary to coordinate with Bureau of Environmental Services, Water Bureau, and Fire in the improvements necessary to improve the permitting process for public works projects. I can share by observation that a big part of the improvements I feel has been beneficial to the process, both customers and employees, is the co-location aspect of it. Having over 30 staff from the different bureaus located in the 1900 building, I have seen firsthand the benefits of the adjacencies, the ability to come together and discuss issues in a collaborative fashion. We certainly are handing this project off to PBOT, but are not in any means removed totally. Certainly the development and projects that include public and private interface, a big part of it is what we do, so we will continue to collaborate and coordinate with PBOT and other bureaus in the development review process. So with that, I'm confident again that this will continue. I'm glad that we were able to achieve the co-location and the improvements to the public works improvement processes. And with Chris and Tom, along with the other bureaus and the outreach that has occurred over last year with the Development Review Advisory Committee, for example. Those are all good processes that I believe that's really well tied to this process. So with that, I'll hand off to Tom, and I'm available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Miller?
Thank you, Paul. For the record, Tom Miller, Director of Transportation, City of Portland. And if I may, I'll just take just a moment to take just a step back and acknowledge you know, this is obviously a collaborative effort in every sense of the word, across bureaus, which is not always easy. We have our respective missions, and figuring out how to collaborate across those sometimes differing missions is, again, not the easiest task. We've also involved external stakeholders across the spectrum, and I think we've got some real tangible improvements to acknowledge. Commissioner Leonard, I want to acknowledge your leadership on this issue. This is a tough issue. You've been at this for years, and again, I think you can, when you leave office, you can feel proud that you have led an important effort in making the city a better, more efficient place to do business and to engage with. Thank you. And Commissioner Saltzman, from your perspective as the commissioner in charge of BDS, again, thank you for the seamless transition, again, overseeing BDS and BDS's constant involvement in collaboration in putting this together. From the private sector perspective, the private sector tells us they want certainty. Above all, they want to know, how do I engage? How do I get my permit? How much time is it going to take? What do I need to do? And in the past, the permit process took as long as it took. And, you know, that is not certainty at all. That is the opposite of certainty. Today, we have hard deadlines that we've established, again, across bureaus with ongoing input from external stakeholders that have now established hard deadlines so that when a citizen comes in for permit, they know exactly how long it will take, a maximum amount of time it will take. And I want to acknowledge, I'm getting ahead of myself just a little bit, Mayor, you'll appreciate this. I want to acknowledge that while the permit process, again, the process itself is streamlined and much improved, and certainly there's more improvement to be done within that construct, there's actually, this has spun off improvements in other areas. The Street by Street Initiative, the effort that you've overseen to direct the Bureau of Transportation to establish a new, more cost-effective, cheaper, hopefully more efficient way of improving streets is a direct spinoff of this public works process effort. The Street by Street Initiative, which you will all hear from us in just a little bit, is a direct result of this collaborative effort across bureaus and with external stakeholders to try to improve this permit process. So that's the big picture. I want to introduce Chris Weir to my right. He is the Public Works Manager for PBOT. And Chris, before you get into more details, I want to acknowledge Kurt Kruger on my staff, Chun Wong, and Christine Leon, who have provided leadership on this issue on behalf of PBOT.
Thank you, Mayor and Council members. My name is Christopher Weir. I'm the Public Works Permitting Manager for the City of Portland. I'm here to present to you the 11-12 fiscal year report for our Public Works permitting process efforts. There were three principal areas when we met last year that the public works agencies were asked to assess and improve. Coordination and collaboration in decision-making, timeliness and certainty of cost in plan review efforts, and providing for a consolidated public works appeal process that people could use. The overriding goal underneath the program is to serve the customer's needs in an efficient and timely manner. The bureaus have worked together to provide efforts on these levels through several efforts. We have biweekly policy meetings with management for direction on program goals. We have weekly interagency coordination meetings at the staff level. We have public works administrative check-in at key project milestones for any particular project. New this year, we've established two committees. One is an encroachment review team. This is made up of interagency bureau members in an effort to advise staff on unique requests that are outside of our standard review process. We also felt there was some effort that needed to be done to consolidate and manage appeals at a lower level, so we created an administrative appeal review committee that sits before the appeals panel. This was created based on the comments of the appeals panel, including those of its citizen members. The most significant change besides the co-location that Paul had mentioned to the system at the start was the creation of specific interim levels of review, which has become known as the 30-60-90 process for us. The benefits of this process are earlier agreement for project concept, earlier conflict resolution through the bureaus, better coordination efforts, and a guaranteed review fee estimate that's provided at that earliest stage. Since we began the process reforms in January of 2010, we've had about 160 projects start up. 68 of those have reached final permit, and 57 of those permits have been issued. Over the past year, we have approximately 90% or greater rate of meeting the time goals for any of the particular phases of the process. We've also, over the course of this last year, seen a large uptick in the number of inquiries, which is the early information efforts that we allow folks to come in and get some early information before they even start with the formal review, and a smaller uptick in the project startups. For the next year, we've created a fixed fee for certain smaller projects in the public works arena. Typically, these are going to be for residential infill based on the criteria that we've set up. Regarding early assistance in public works inquiries, the interagency bureaus have concluded that future options need to include the Bureau of Development Services as well as the interagency bureaus to better get right information to the applicants at the right time. The agencies have already initiated discussion with Bureau of Development Services in these efforts, and we hope that the ITAP improvements that are also coming will help to better this effort. Besides the Administrative Review Appeal Committee, we've also made a few other changes in the Public Works appeal process, which include allowing the applicants to present the information themselves at the appeals panel. Previously, this was only done at the board level, which was the third and final level. We've also expanded the role of the appeals panel in order to consider alternative designs. The appeals process has also to help inform and change the overall public works process. The street-by-street initiative that the mayor has put forward, and that Tom spoke about, is just one exciting example of this. Bureau of Environmental Services, based on some comments, has created an abbreviated process to do short sewer extensions. The process has also allowed for better coordination between the chief engineers of the three infrastructure bureaus. All of these examples were stimulated through the appeals and feedback loop process. Since the beginning of the Administrative Review Committee in January 2012, we've had 135 appeals, which have led to 25 panel appeals and 3 board appeals. To compare, there's been about 1,000 estimated appeal opportunities within the review process and 40 total project startups in the same time. So plans for next year, besides continuing to refine and improve the efforts that I've already discussed, the bureaus are looking forward to developing and piloting the street-by-street initiative program. To further refine the permitting and appeals process, including formalizing the feedback loop in order to inform program work plans, to look for ways to better align the plan review stage, which we've done a good job reforming, and the construction management process, which we have still to work on, to work closer with Bureau of Development Services in the ITAP process to provide better interfaces for right-of-way permitting, to collapse the complexity of the early assistance process based on the applicant and project needs, and to finalize a new permitting fee schedule that reflects the cost data we've collected over the course of the new process. On behalf of the interagency bureaus and their staff that works hard every day to provide timely and cost-effective information to applicants while having the infrastructure designed to city goals, I thank you for your time and ask you to accept the report. Thank you.
Is there more? Any initial questions? Is anyone else going to testify?
I guess
Commissioner Salzman?
Yeah. Christopher, could you elaborate on what the 30, 60, 90 means?
So the review processes have 3 distinct stages of review. Concept plan, which is essentially just the basis of what the improvements are going to be. That's what we call 30. Then an engineering design, which includes the scope of the project and most of the engineering details, and that's the 60%. And then the 90% review process, which is final plans preparation.
So these are percentages of the completion of a project through the permitting?
Typically they're along those lines. That's correct.
And then you mentioned there were 125 appeals this year so far?
Correct.
I guess some. Do you know what percentage of those appeals were successful or not successful?
We do. I think
I mean, that's if you have report. If you don't have it, you can email it to me.
Sure. Okay. I'll send that to you.
Other discussion? All right, thank you. Is anyone signed up to testify for item number 892?
No one else signed up.
All right, Carla, would you please? I'll entertain a motion to accept the report.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion to accept the report contained in 892?
Saltzman?
Well, I want to thank Bureau directors for development services, transportation, environmental services. Am I leaving out in that pretty much?
Water.
Water too, okay. And I appreciate the efforts of Commissioner Leonard initially when he was commissioner in charge of the Bureau of Development Services to really work to improve this process, make it more user-friendly and make it more responsive. And you know, now that I'm the commissioner in charge of the Bureau of Development Services, I'm pleased to be able to say that this seems to be working well, and the co-location of staff is really, to my mind, that makes all the difference in the world. When you have people, you know, sitting around the water cooler from different bureaus, they can problem solve on behalf of our public and our applicants in ways that just doesn't happen when you're located in different locations. So thanks to all of you for making this work, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Leonard.
I certainly appreciate all the work you've done, Tom, you, and Paul. But, you know, I really don't think this could have happened without Paul Scarlett taking the approach that he did, which is instinctive to him, collaborative, thoughtful, and not worried about who gets credit for what. Of the things that I've accomplished in the last 10 years, hiring you is right at the top of the list. So I really appreciate all of your great work, and Tom, you supported him. Aye.
Fritz?
Well, thanks to the Bureau leadership and also to all the line staff who also worked really hard to make this work. I'm very impressed with the outcomes, and I appreciate you bringing this report back every year so that we track what do we do, is it working, is it not, and indeed it is working. Over 94% of the timeline goals met, including up to 98 and 100% on some of them. So that shows that the process is indeed working, and it shows that this council has proven that the commission form of government can actually work quite well when we collaborate, when we make sure that we're talking with each other, that we're acknowledging that there are different bureaus with different interests, and yet they need to work well for the public. That's what this project has shown. So I'm also very pleased that this has been something that I've helped to accomplish in my first term, and I very much appreciate the way that the council has worked together to make sure that it has worked, both Commissioner Leonard and Commissioner Saltzman with their leadership of development services and all of the other development bureaus. And particularly, I appreciate the Development Review Advisory Committee and the Citywide Land Use Group, that you have made sure that the public at large has been involved, as well as doing internal processes. So sometimes on the Public Involvement Advisory report, we get, no, this was an administrative process. There was no public input. I was really pleased to see on this one that you acknowledged the work of DRAC and the Citywide Land Use Group, and have been very careful that when the public knows what we're doing, often they see that we're doing a really good job, and that instills confidence in the whole system. So thank you very much. Aye.
Fish?
Now, I'm amazed in looking at this report that it was over 3.5 years ago when we had a very vigorous debate in this room about how to reform the public works permit process. And I think it's worth noting that when the mayor was elected, he came in and I think put as many as 5 markers down of kind of complex structural things he wanted to tackle, all of them very complicated, none of them, you know, very sexy. But this one was probably the wonkiest in some respects. We had some significant differences of opinion up here, not about the outcome, the need to reform the system, but about the path. And I think one of the best debates we ever had was the debate about the difference between co-location and consolidation. But that debate should, and the differences of opinion should not obscure the fact that the council was united in wanting to reform the system. So with everybody's constructive input, what we got was sort of a compromise on co-location. But nothing was going to work without the folks who were before us making it work. And so I want to echo what my colleagues have said in thanking you, Paul, and all the bureau directors for implementing this change. It started with the mayor putting his marker down. It then took tremendous leadership and some flexibility from my friend Commissioner Leonard. And then it took the bureaus to implement it. But I think we're making progress. And so I want to thank everyone who has been part of this for your good work. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to underline my thanks to each of you. Paul has been here the whole time, and Tom worked on this when he served as my chief of staff. I want to also acknowledge Commissioner Leonard's excellent leadership on this and Commissioner Saltzman's continuation of this effort. It was the second week in January, the second week of the term of this council, that we did separate and address dysfunction in the organization, in the city organization, good people trapped in organizational dysfunction and separated housing and economic development. Commissioner Leonard's proposal to fast-track 5 years' worth of infrastructure into 2 years to help people keep working during a period of the recession where the region was losing 25,000 jobs a month, create the first economic development strategy in 15 years, and then improve our permitting process, both with the co-location, but also, as others up here have talked about, with the clear standards. And those are absolutely key. So I really want to thank you, Christine, Lana, everyone else in the room that's worked on this. This is, as Nick said, this is the absolutely vital work, unsexy it might be. You only get newspaper notice when something goes awry, but incredibly necessary. So thank you. Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for item number 893?
Amend 5 grant agreements for $79,722 each for Center for Intercultural Organizing, Immigrant Refugee Community Organization, Latino Network, Native American Youth and Family Center, and Urban League of Portland for the Diversity and Civic Leadership Organizing Program for the period July 1, 2012 through June 30, 2013.
Commissioner Fritz, were you going to make some opening remarks?
Thank you. These grant agreements provide financial and limited staff assistance from the Office of Neighborhood Involvement for the purpose of supporting civic participation for historically underengaged communities, with a goal of increasing the number and diversity of folks involved in their communities, strengthening community capacity, and increasing community impact on public decisions. This is a program that's been going for several years now, and I think was initiated under Mayor Potter. The Office of Neighborhood Involvement is about community involvement, community engagement, and how people participate, make sure that everybody feels welcome in participating. The Office of Equity and Human Rights is more focused on how the city does its work and how we do jobs and contracts and provide services in the community. So that's one of the differences between the two bureaus. This is an immensely successful program, and we wanted to spend just a few minutes this morning letting you know the purposes and outcomes of some of the grants. So with that, I'll introduce Jerry Williams, who's the manager of the program for the Office of Neighborhood Involvement.
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you so much for having us this morning. As the commissioner so aptly described the program, we completed our fifth year this year in June and are working on our sixth. We're currently working on a five-year report and video to describe the work, to take it out into the community, to share with all of those other groups that have applied. This has been an incredibly successful program, working with these five organizations, and it's been an incredible honor to work with these leaders. Each group has done a ton of work with many of the different bureaus, including the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability for the last 2 years. They're getting ready to do some work with the Bureau of Housing and Community Development. They've sat on boards for the Water Bureau. They've sat on the PIAC, the Public Involvement Advisory Committee. And we also have a Native American Human Rights Commissioner, as well as a Native American Planning Commissioner. And so things have changed fairly rapidly in the last 5 years to include many communities who have never been involved before. On Sunday, my father-in-law passed away. He was 95 years old. He was African American, and he came to Oregon through the 1940s, to come up and work in the shipyards. He lived an incredible life, and he lived in Vanport. My mother-in-law lived in Vanport, and throughout the 20 years of organizing I've done in communities of color, I've always kind of used them as a barometer to say, are we speaking a language that Thelma and Ray would understand? Are we appealing to the things that Thelma and Ray need in their community? And so they've always served as a great barometer, as well as these incredible folks who we have in the audience today, who some of them are going to be speaking, have come and participated in these programs. We have actually over 400 graduates in the last 5 years of leadership programs of people who have committed themselves to sign up for a year's worth of work to learn how the city works, how to engage with commissioners, how to testify before city council, how to advocate for their communities. And what we find every year is that when we open up the programs again in July for folks to be recruited in, we still have more people than what we can serve every year. And we have more communities coming to us saying, how do we get involved in that program? So it's been an incredibly successful program, which has increased the voices of Portlanders, which was the goal, is to increase the voices of Portlanders that hadn't been heard before to engage with the city of Portland. And with that, I'm going to bring up, we have actually 5 testifiers, and I'm going to bring up the first 3, which are Victor Salinas from Latino Network, Ahmed from CIO, and Amber Starks from the Urban League.
CIO is what?
Center for Intercultural Organizing. Thanks, Dan.
These are just invited.
Good morning, Mayor Adams and commissioners. My name is Victor Salinas, and I work as a coordinator for Latino Network's Leadership and Civic Engagement Program, LIDERES. Latino Network provides transformative opportunities, services, and advocacy for the education, leadership, and civic engagement of our youth, families, and communities. In our commitment to serve our communities of Portland, with the funding we receive from the Office of Neighborhood Involvement's Diversity and Civic Leadership Program, we facilitate the LIDERES Academy. This is a year-round training program focused on social justice, regional governance, environmental and social sustainability, civic engagement, and leadership development. Academy participants are connected with public and elected officials and encouraged to serve on boards, commissions, and committees. This year, our Academy boasted 26 graduates. As a result of our outreach efforts, we had the largest representation of self-identified Latina and Latino LGBT community members partake in this capacity-building endeavor. This Leadership Academy in addition, this year we launched the pilot project Lidercitos with 13 participants. This Leadership Academy for our youth prepares the next generation of leaders, participants who range from 5 to 12 years of age and whose parents or guardians are in the Adult Leadership Academy are taught age-appropriate curriculum that mirrors Academy curriculum. They learn how to develop testimony, make presentations on sustainability issues, and learn about how our regional government works. Pedro Sandoval Prieto, Academy alumni, reports, they, Latino Network, build my capacity and prepare me to provide support to the community and raise our voice for a better change in our community. Our Academy alumni remain very active participating in community forums, events, and activities. 8 of our 2012 alumni serve on Latino Network's Comité de Líderes Latinos, an advisory committee that meets monthly to help shape our programs, advocate, and address community issues. This Leadership Academy has provided a path for Latinos in the Portland area to become engaged civic leaders in their communities and the larger Portland community as well. We would like to thank you for making this project possible because it allows us to empower our Latino Portlanders to help shape this beautiful city through active engagement and participation. Thank you for your time and your commitment to empowering Portland's diverse communities. Gracias.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you. Morning, Mayor Sam Adams and commissioners. My name is Amber Starks, and earlier this year, I was fortunate to be accepted into the Urban League's Social Justice and Civic Leadership, or SJCL, cohort, which is an extension of the Diversity and Civic Leadership Program through the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. The goal of the SJCL is to provide members of the cohort with invaluable skills and effective tools for impacting policy changes that improve our community. Through the trainings, civic engagement opportunities, legislative action days, members of the cohort are gaining necessary information and skills to empower us to become effective leaders. In my case, I've taken the knowledge acquired in the cohort to start a social justice campaign around natural hair care called the Natural Hair Act. Currently in Oregon, it is illegal to braid, twist, dread, or style hair, even if you're not using chemicals, scissors, or heat. In fact, it isn't allowed even if you would like to volunteer your services, unless you've attended 1,700 hours of cosmetology school and passed the licensing exam. This, of course, is expensive and can cost up to $20,000. To say the least, it is a barrier. At first thought, the law appears to be fair because the Cosmetology Licensing Board was created to ensure training around hairstyling as well as safety and sanitation. However, current cosmetology curriculum in Oregon does not address natural hair care and is given little attention to African-style braiding or other natural hair care such as twisting and dreading. In addition, many licensed stylists have informed me that they've learned nothing in school around African hair, and they often turn clients away because they feel inadequate about providing natural or services to ethnic clients. This represented a major problem for me as I realized the current law marginalizes, dismisses, and often ignores our community who have for centuries practiced the cultural act of natural hair care. In addition, it creates a barrier to economic development, especially to African and African American women. And in a time like this, in a time like the one we find ourselves in, economic marginalization is not an option. With my skills I've learned around community organizing in the SJCL, I reached out to my community in an effort to build support around the law. I've contacted my legislators, and we've met, and we are in the process of composing the first draft of the bill, which will be submitted September 15th. I've also hosted a natural hair town hall meeting where the community had an opportunity to voice the importance of this law, and I've created a Contact Your Legislator campaign through social media where individuals can send a picture of themselves to their legislators asking them to support the bill. I am a product of your investment, and so are others in the cohort. The funding you provide isn't simply about doing good. It is about providing access to individuals like me who see the need in their community and empowering them to become a part of the process in order to make effective changes that are both equitable and just. Thank you for providing me the space to share my story.
Good morning. My name is Ahmed Eir, and I'm one of the immigrants to this country. Currently, my work is I work with Lutheran Community Services as a project coordinator for a program called African Partnership for Health, which promotes health equity and help overcome cultural and systematic barriers to equity care for African refugees and immigrants in Oregon. And I am one of the graduates from pilot projects with the CIO, Center for Intercultural Organizing. And I'm here just to testify how it benefited me. My background is community development, and I always like organizing communities and helping them to move from one point to the other, to another in a positive way. And there's nothing more important than helping the community to organize itself so that it can be empowered to take control of its own needs and difficulties so that they can have a solution to it. And so this project, as we went in, I was a little bit wasn't sure what is going to be coming out of it. But when I went to the project, I realized that there were not only one group of people which come from the same area, but it brought together people from different areas, different parts of the world, with people with different worldviews, different experiences, and different way of looking at things. Be it democracy, maybe they never knew anything like democracy in their country. They never knew how to advocate for themselves. And here we all come together not only looking at the problems that we share, but even the solution that we have in common. And at CIO, we learned about leadership in relation to refugees and immigrants, sharing community spaces, be it physical or political. Maybe some people never had that kind of opportunity where they can be able to have a voice, to be able to make a change. But here it was a time when they were told, we were told to know that we have a chance to be able to make a change in our areas and where we live and in our community. And roles, we were told about what roles do we play in refugees and in migrants to make leaders become leaders and advocates and brokers for our communities, not only for ourselves. Understanding power relations, how do we get what we want? Not like what we were back home, maybe by gun or by forcing somebody, by coercing somebody, but how can you get it? Through the right channels. Understanding power relations, we say models of social changes. Maybe we only knew one type of social changes, but now they taught us several types of social changes where we can really get solution to what we really wanted to achieve. Understanding not only what makes us different, but what makes us same. What is, many of us are coming from different areas, and maybe we're different, language different, culture different, we look different. But what brings us into this country is almost the same. And as we live in the same community, the problem that faces us is the same. And the solution, we can do it together, and that's what we learned at Pilot. Also, we were told about the history of U.S. regarding immigration policies and how it relates to us personally now as a new immigrant into this country and refugees, and how can we make a difference in this time that we are playing as part in it. Social models engaging people on our community, building community as a powerhouse so that we can be able to participate not only for ourselves, but the whole general framework, and see that the policies and things which are affecting us is being heard by other people, and we can voice our things and we can advocate for our communities, and that things can be positively affecting us, can be implemented. How can we, as community leaders, be communities who are based within the community, leaders who are based from the community? Because many times there are different type of leaders. There is formal leaders and there are informal leaders. And most of us who were in that project, in this pilot project, are informal leaders. You know, people who are recognized by the community and who can be heard by the community. But maybe some of us were not people who have suits on, and I'm not talking about myself only, but for the other rest of the community who maybe did not even speak enough English. They haven't gone to school in proper style that we think, but they are known in the community. And then we were told how we can voice. We can take the things that we learn to the community, affect that, and bring it back so that we can be heard in a proper way. So Pilot has been a time of empowering and developing a unified voice through organizing, advocating for our rights, and creating environment for organizing ourselves and getting organized as a valued community members of Portland. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
I actually have two more because in the name of equity, we let everyone speak. So we have five groups that we fund. So I have Vivian Sohappy and Joe Berezinski. You want to come up too?
Good morning.
Welcome Salome.
To
yeah. Go ahead, Vivian.
Good morning. My name is Vivian Sohappy, and I am a member of the Umatilla tribe from Pendleton, Oregon. And I have been a community member here for some time, and I've served on the Portland Youth and Elders Council for several years. And I would just like to say that before the Portland Youth and Elders Council came to be, there was little to no voice for our community members at the city level, and so I appreciate this time that you've given us to share a testimony about what the Portland Youth and Elders Council has done for myself. It's essential that the members of our Native community have the opportunity to come together and share a unified voice and deepen our understanding in a way that, you know, different levels, you know, from the Portland youth club to our elders in the community, and to share with one another and come to an understanding within our own community as relational people. And so we could have a unity where we could come to you and speak about the issues that impact our families in a cultural aspect, you know. So I would just like to say that with the issues that impact us and the disparities and things of our community, that we could come together and make it meaningful to us and to you, the things that we need to overcome some of these barriers in our lives that affect our families. I would like to also add that the Portland Youth and Elders Council participates now on 23 different committees, councils, and advisory groups. And so it's real important that we continue to receive your support in this council so that we can continue to build strong relationships and establish new ones for our community as a whole. And I thank you.
Thank you.
And my name is Joseph Berzinski, and I'm a Portlander since 1992. But I have not been involved in any kind of government programs or any kind of way, because Slavic community tends to stay pretty quiet. One of the reasons for that is they're mostly religious people, and religious people stay out of the government offices. They don't like to be involved with government. So I also took that route and stayed away, even though I could have been very useful. But in 2010 was the first time I went through the Engage program. And after going through the program, my eyes opened up to a different level, which I have been ever since, and in a public light where I'm known in my community, and I'm known also in the programs that I deal with. I became a community advocate at a Slavic community center. So, and we build programs that are for the help of the community, and our main goals is to get the Slavic community involved in the government, which is very slow and hard to come by. So I'm happy that I went through the program, because it totally opened up my eyes, and I'm not the same Portlander no more.
That's great. Hi.
Hello, Mayor Adams and fellow commissioners. My name is Salome Chimugu. I am from Portland, New Columbia specifically, and my family immigrated here from Angola in 1990. So I am also a member at CIO, and I would like to share my opinions about the pilot program which they provide. And a little history, I work in the legislature during the session, and I've also worked for the Secretary of State's office in the Elections Division. And so civic engagement is something that I've kind of put as a forefront of my life. What I received from Pilot is something that I feel like no amount of education nor civic activism can bring you, and that's a sense of a community and a home. Oftentimes, as many of us know, the Oregon legislature kind of looks monochromatic in the sense of people look a certain way, dress a certain way, and behave a certain way. And although Oregon is a diversely and rapidly so changing state, it's not yet as reflective of the diversity that our state and the city does have. And in pilot, what I did experience was a sense of welcoming and a sense of home and a sense of acceptance. And so whether I was dressed the way I am now in front of you, or whether I was dressed in traditional and golden clothing, I was still treated as who I am, and there was no word of how well I spoke English. It was just an accepted fact. I do think that Pilot is a